This week, behind the scenes with those that spin spanners on our Porsches.
Brought to you by Nineworks.co.uk, the fastest growing online Porsche community, supported by the Nineworks Marketplace. Nineworks Radio is your dedicated Porsche and car podcast, hosted by Lee Sibley, Andy Brooks, and Max Newman. Nineworks Radio is carefully produced with special input from experts around the industry and powered by our valued members of the Nineworks Driven Not Hidden Collective. How you doing, gents?
Really good. Hot.
In the city tonight. So I'm just going to start every episode with a little song now. If you're up for it.
Yeah, any requests out there, including those to keep the noise down, they're very welcome. How are you both? All good, Max and Andy?
Yeah, really good.
Fine.
I'm getting acclimatized for California with this late summer sun that we're having.
Yeah, it's wonderful, isn't it?
Fantastic.
Very much so. It also occurs to me that by the time you at home are listening to this, we might already be stateside. We'll keep the California giddiness to a minimum because we've just been doing that for half an hour or so away from the mic. But yes, Rensport Union is coming up and the countdown is very much on. What have you guys been up to in the interim? Anything of interest?
Well, it's definitely Boxster weather at the moment.
I bet.
That's some great. Not big drives, really. I haven't been anywhere, you know, doing any special things. I've just been using the Boxster for the journeys that I've got to do. Top down, absolutely brilliant. Loving it.
Catching the sun. Where? How's your sunburn?
Well, I've got plenty of hair, so the sunburn's not too bad.
Okay.
But it's
sounded like a dig, Max.
It did, didn't it? But I've just let it slide. I've washed over it. I brushed it aside. Hey. But, you know, it's been like 25, 26, 27 degrees, haven't it? Get the top down. I've noticed as well, actually, because it's been so hot. Quite often I drive it with the windows up, but the roof down. But because it's been so warm, I've had the windows down. And you get a bit more induction from that. I don't know if it's the intake on the side or if there's just something that's coming more into the cabin by having the windows down. But that's good. I noticed that the other day when I was coming back from Atelier's. Somebody did say to me, actually, I was on a chat group thing on Facebook, a Boxster thing. They said about there's a layer of sound deadening foam on top of the engine, in the engine compartment. Apparently just taking that out makes a nice noticeable difference to the induction noise and that sort of thing. So
yeah, that's nice. So it gives you the noise rather than the granny that's walking down the street getting blasted by exhaust noise.
Yeah, so that was an interesting little tip that I got in a trail of conversation about remapping 981Ss to GTS spec, you know, the GTS calibration.
Yeah.
And putting an IPD plenum on it and things like that. It was in that conversation someone said, "Oh yeah, and there's a bit of foam, you can take that out." And that's a good thing too. So all's good in Boxster land.
Be doing your own spannering?
Well, I don't know about that. Maybe next time I'm
ripping
see Chris.
The shit out of your Boxster.
Yeah, I'll be taking off all the wrong bits.
Taking it apart is easy. It's putting it back together that's problematic.
This is true. You're very good at that, aren't you, Lee?
Yeah. as you know only too well, my friend. Yeah, exactly that.
I prefer to leave my spannering to the professionals, which is convenient given the people that we're chatting to today.
Definitely. Just before we jump into that, I just want to say at the top of the show that we have got a really cool event coming up for later in the year. So if you've got a penchant for a 993, you might want to stick this in the diary. So on Thursday, the 2nd of November, we are going to be celebrating 30 years of the last air-cooled 911, of course, the 993. I'm delighted to say we're going to be joined at Porsche Centre Bournemouth. That's where the event is going to be held, down here in lovely Dorset. We're going to be joined by the designer of that car, the legendary Tony Hatter. So Tony has agreed to come over and celebrate 30 years of that car and his design with us. We're going to be doing some little bits and pieces around that, which we'll communicate in due time. Really cool stuff, but we'll just sit on that for now. But yeah, if you're interested in coming along, it's going to be a free event, but it is going to be ticketed. So just stick that in your diary. Thursday, the 2nd of November at Porsche Centre Bournemouth, 30 years of 993, where you will be answering, or you will have the opportunity to ask some questions to Mr. Tony Hatter live, who designed the car.
That's a real coup, isn't it? I mean, Tony's a fantastic bloke, as well as being, you know, pretty legendary in Porsche design terms. That's pretty special.
He's such a top man, Max. Obviously, he came over in 2022 for the inaugural Nineworks Awards. They'll be returning in 2024, by the way. But he was, as you'll know, Max, you had a good chat with him on the night. He was a guest of honour for that award. So I didn't think we'd be able to get him back over into the UK 2 years in a row, but he's very kindly agreed to it. So top stuff all round there. And be nice to celebrate 30 years of the last air-cooled 911 generation.
Yeah, almost brilliant. Feel like I should go and steal my Porsche 993 back from Spain for the weekend. See if Jose's up for it.
So that's just it for kind of a little bit of housekeeping up front. Today's episode, though, we are talking about spinning spanners, which is ironic because between the three of us, Andy, it's only you that's like remotely capable of that, really.
I'm not sure I'm that capable, but there we go.
I beg to differ. Yeah, I think you're definitely the man when it comes to all of that. Max and I are what's commonly referred to as checkbook mechanics.
Without a doubt.
So, yeah, but it's people such as Chris and Ollie who keep our Porsche passion, the wheels turning on our Porsche passions, to be honest, because whether it's repairs, maintenance, upgrades, whatever it is, those are the guys that do the biz for us, and many others like them throughout the industry. So it will be good to chat to them. So we've got Chris from Rightune and we've got Ollie from Philip Raby Porsche, who are both joining us to give us a bit of a flavour and understanding of what it's like being a Porsche techie from within the industry, really.
Almost a bit behind the scenes, really, isn't it?
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. We just drop the cars off, and then when we get them back, they're usually, certainly healthier, but sometimes faster, sometimes lighter, but always in better health than when we drop them off. And it's thanks to those like those chaps that look after it. But again, we don't really know what happens. Not really. So we're about to be enlightened into all the problems that we impart on Chris and Ollie, really, and just find out kind of what it's like. We've plenty of chat in between, you know, like we've got some cool topics to cover, haven't we, including like tech, independent VOPCs, which is the perennial debate as well. So with that in mind, I think shall we have a chat?
Yeah, let's get them on.
Chris Wright from Rightune, Ollie Barkley from Philip Raby. Thanks for joining us on Nineworks Radio.
That's right. Nice to be here.
Good day, chaps.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much for having us.
Awesome. So, yes, it's going to be an exciting episode to kind of dive into your world, really, because not too many of us are privy to it. But I think it would be worthwhile starting with a quick intro on you both. So, Ollie, maybe you wouldn't mind going first and just giving the listeners a little bit of an idea in terms of how long you've been in the industry, what your current role is.
Yeah. So when did I start? I was about 18. I'm now 25. So that would, is that 7-8 years? About that?
Yeah,
about 7-8 years. Started off working in it was a different Porsche specialist down the road from where I lived. So I did my apprenticeship through them. Since then, I've worked at Philip Raby. With Will and Phil. So it's not so much doing the sales side, but starting up a service centre alongside the sales, which we've been doing for the last 3 years. It's going really well. I guess that's a bit about me.
Tops. And Chris, what about yourself, good sir?
I've worked in the Porsche world since 2011. So yeah, like 12 years. My dad's been at it for a long time, since probably nearly birth. I think he was born with a spanner. But yeah, he's been at Porsches for a long time. But mostly engines and gearboxes to begin with, racing. I started, although I've only been doing it since 2011, I started racing when I was like 9 in karting. I was involved in that. I'm still involved with that and just like anything with an engine, really. I mean, even like last weekend, I had an opportunity and went to see NASCAR in Daytona, which was not Porsche, but just like obviously grew up watching things like Days of Thunder. So I was just there like a child, like, oh, but yeah, that's it really. And now our business is, this is a small family business. There's a couple of us there, about three of us. And we do anything, service, repair, restoration on any type of Porsche, basically.
Yeah, cracking. And this is why I think it's great to have you guys on this episode, because I think there's like a real synergy between the two businesses, certainly in terms of like size and ethos and everything else. Like it's very different to OPCs with their hundreds of employees, huge annual turnover and everything else. There's definitely a synergy between you two in regards to like family feel and everything else. So, so Chris, I suppose, given your background, was it always the case that you were going to kind of roll into the Porsche arena?
No, not really, not at all. It's just it just sort of organically worked like that. I just started, to be honest, just started working with my dad one day, and then I never left. and then it became something that I loved. It wasn't something I was definitely going to do, but I was always interested in something to do, you know, mechanical or something like engineering wise. I have done lots of other jobs. Nothing really worked. Nothing would capture my, you know, imagination or interest for long enough, really. And but this, I like this because it's, I think before we've spoken on a podcast about it before, we touched on it, but it's, every day's different. You can it's quite an expansive job. You can do different things. And then also you're problem solving. So every day that's what I enjoy. I mean, it's just, yeah. So yeah, I wasn't always it was not my destiny.
But, it sounds like entrapment to me. Your dad's got you.
Haven't you got a graphic design background, Chris?
I can't be bothered anymore. Can you come? Yeah. No. It's good, and I'm very lucky. And I'm, without him as well, I owe a lot to my dad. It's been a very great thing, and I'm excited for the future as well. It's just great with everything that's happening with Porsche and with the industry. Although it's a bit, I'd say maybe since COVID and stuff, it's now starting to get a little bit tricky, but it's just an interesting business, I think, to be in.
So, Chris, have you sort of formally taken over the reins of the business then? So is it on your shoulders now to sort of take the thing forward? I know, you know, you still see your dad sometimes when I'm there, but how is it set up now?
Yeah, basically, I'm taking it over and taking it forward. Without going to the ins and outs of it, but yeah, that's what I am doing. And yeah, he's sort of semi-retired now. He does like 2 days a week.
Right.
Apart from when he wants to come in more, he will. And then when he doesn't want to come in, he doesn't.
Yeah, right.
So unofficially, he does what he wants.
Well, I want to just kind of put that same question to kind of Ollie then as well. So kind of was working with Porsche something that you'd always wanted to do?
No, not particularly. I always had massive interest in motorbikes. Sort of going through school, didn't really know what I wanted to do, but loved sort of taking things apart, putting them back together, playing around, sort of seeing what I break and don't break, to be honest. And it sort of got to the point where you sort of have to make a bit of a decision where you want to go with your life. I saw an apprentice position pop up at a garage. So I thought, you know, why not go down and see what it's about? And I was working with a guy called Jordan, the first job we did was it was on a Turbo 997. I just fell in love with it after that point because I saw him working on this really cool car. I was like, oh, I think I've got to do this. And it's just sort of been that ever since. I'd sort of have to repeat what Chris said. I mean, even though you're working in the same building every day is different. Every day there's a slightly new challenge. You've got to go about something slightly differently. Whether you're working with different people, doing different jobs, working on different cars, or even dealing with different customers, every day does feel different, which for me, I've really liked, because I'd sit and do an office job or go and do the same repetitive thing every day. You'd sort of lose interest really quick. I would, anyway.
So what is it then, Ollie, about the cars in particular? Like, what is it about Porsches that grabbed you from that moment with the 997 Turbo?
I think the whole sort of ethos around Porsche, luxury, sporty, the performance sort of sides, and they're not necessarily conventionally like other cars you see on the road, engines in the back, how they're set up, they've obviously got loads of similarities with other cars, but I do think they're quite unique in themselves. So once you sort of get to grips with how it all works, I personally think they're quite really enjoyable cars to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to Land Rovers, Jaguars, stuff like that, for me it's night and day. We're working on these cars and sort of keeping up the enthusiasm to enjoy it, really.
I was thinking, actually, Ollie, because at Philip Raby, you're known for Porsches and being a Porsche specialist, but you do have other marks in, don't you? Certainly on the sales side. Does that transfer onto the service side as well, or is the service side really Porsche centric?
It is and it isn't. I mean, we are known for Porsche, and 80-90% of the cars that we do are Porsche. But obviously, at the moment I'm looking at Triumph, Maserati, we've got a Morgan. So there's other things we do, but we definitely heavily focus on the Porsche world. And it's amazing how much work there is out there for them, and that how big of a market there really is. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does. It's probably useful seeing some of those other cars just emphasizes or re-emphasizes how good Porsche are, I suppose, isn't it? Get a handle of some of those other things.
Gives you context.
Yeah, 100%. So this throw something into the arena here for you techies, really. So my youngest brother, Joe, he's also a technician, albeit he's at a general garage back home in Colchester. And when I bought my first 911, I took a pair of shiny Miltec back boxes round to him in the car. And I said, I'd love for you to fit this in your spare time. As if the privilege was all his, right? And which he wasn't best pleased about. But any case, so he said, look, I'll do it like on a Saturday morning. Any case, like it took like the majority of the day. There was a lot of swearing going on from him and everything else. And he just didn't enjoy it. And he said, when it was done, and he did a fine job, but it took a while. When it was done, he said, never, ever, ever bring one of these POS cars to me ever again. And I was just like, what's the matter? It's a Porsche, Joe. Like, oh my, people aspire to own these cars. Yeah. He said, I don't care. Yeah. And he said, no, absolute POS. And he said, why they put the engine in the back? He said, it's beyond me. It makes my job really difficult. He said, for starters, the heat, everything under here is rusted. I mean, obviously, this was the start of my 996 journey, right? But everything under here is rusted. Everything under here is seized. There's been so much heat in such a small area, it's exacerbated all the problems. And he said, and also, because it's such a tiny area, I can't get to anything. So even something that should be a simple job, like replacing back boxes, has taken me all day. I never want to do it again. Simply never bring one of these POSs to my door ever again. And Joe, I haven't done that. Tipped up at night tune instead. But you know, it was that experience just completely put him off Porsches completely. But, you know, in what you guys have said, early doors in this conversation, you know, there is you love them, you know, so it's quite interesting. Is it fair to say they're an acquired taste?
We like there's words for people like us. We like punishment.
That's what it is. You're saying it's magic.
love hate relationship sometimes.
So how does that fare with the 911 then? Because it is fair to say, from an engineering standpoint, it does have its foibles, right?
I don't know. I can't talk from much experience, because I've only ever worked on them. So I don't know what the other I haven't worked on any other cars, so I don't know. I mean, there's a general garage next to us, next door. I remember when I just early doors, I went, like, in my career, I went in there and went, "Oh, this is strange what you're doing with this." They went, "No, this is conventional. What you're doing is weird."
That's so true.
So I don't know any difference. That's probably why it's not too bad. But yeah, but my dad's worked on lots of like Exotica, Ferraris, all that kind of stuff, Lamborghinis. And one of the reasons he started just a Porsche workshop was his opinion was it was the best product to work on. Although I do understand if we have some packaging issues, and sometimes with the modern ones, you do think, why the hell have they put like water pipes and brake pipes here? It's really aggro. But it's obviously to do with speed of manufacture, and if they hadn't and production and stuff, and if they hadn't have done that, then I don't know if the company would still be here, you know. So there you go. And then you hear of other craziness going on with like Range Rovers and things, where you've got to take the body off to get to the AC system and stuff. So it's bad, but it's not too bad.
Yeah, well, I know last week we had to replace the turbos on Will's Range Rover. All of a sudden, you have to drop all the engine, gearbox, the whole lot to do it. And I did it all weird. It was a headache. And after that, it was a similar situation. I was like, make sure you don't bring the car back. I've sort of learned what I quite like to do. And working on Range Rovers is not something I like to do.
Would I be right in saying then that the taking an engine out of a 911 is much easier than taking an engine out of a Range Rover?
I think it's what you know. For me, I definitely say it is easier, without a doubt. I'm sure if you spoke to a technician who worked in Land Rover, he'd probably argue the toss and say, actually, if you know what you're doing with them, it's actually really straightforward.
Yeah.
I think he'd be lying, because I think they're a massive headache. But I don't know if Chris agrees, but I think they're quite straightforward to work on.
Yeah, I think pulling the engine out is the older they get, the less space you have to work, so that can make it fiddly. But yeah, I mean, an air-cooled car, you drop them out the bottom, and then you always pull the engine out. Like, obviously, some conventional cars, you have a crane lift it out the top, don't you, in the front? But 911, drop it out the bottom. If you really, really go for it on like an air-cooled car, you can get it out in about an hour. But that's, you know, if you're really in the shit at a track.
Yeah.
But, you know, but yeah, and even with the water-cooled ones, yeah, you've got more things to disconnect. Getting it in, obviously, it's like, you know, you've got to be a bit more careful. But, you know.
I assume, Chris, you meant the newer they are, the less room there is.
So the later the car, the less room you've got, the more fiddly it is.
That point you made, Chris, about the you know, the modern production and the need for speed of production and all of that sort of thing, you know, puts things in awkward places. I suppose that's also part of the you know, it's a flip side from your side and the owner side, isn't it? It's the enduring appeal of the design and the development and that sort of thing. But by constantly developing the same thing rather than starting again, you do end up with, you know, adding bits and workarounds and stuff like that. And I'm kind of interested just to hear both of your views on a particular generation there. Before they became really popular and expensive and, you know, the car to have, we were told, in inverted commas, were told to avoid 964s, aside, you know, either side of 3.2s and 993s, because they're so complicated, because they're a transitional car with lots of new bits. And so from a labour point of view, they were hard work. So you're better off with a 993 or a 3.2. Is that still true? Does that ring true? Or are you so used to it now that 964s are as easy as anything else?
Me personally, I'm not a big fan of 964s. I think they've sort of got their place and they look really cool. Working on them, I try to avoid it purely down to corrosion. They are quite fiddly to get into. And if they haven't been looked after, they can prove to be really problematic. If you get a nice, well looked after one, they're not too bad, but yeah, I think it's compared to the cars coming out nowadays, they're by far not really advanced or really tricky. When you see how much tech and vacuum lines and whatnot they shove into all these modern cars, you open some bonnets and it's like a maze, and you don't really know where to start when you're just trying to change a sensor. You've got to take so much off. So in regards to that, the older air-cooled cars, it's a lot easier to get your head around and to understand what you're looking at and how to actually get somewhere with them.
What about you, Chris? Where are you on 964s?
Yeah, I like them a lot, but yeah, I agree with what you said there, but the other problem you do have with older cars is if somebody has, obviously it's that old, that somebody might have been, if you're looking for some sort of odd issue with it, usually like electrical, and then somebody's been in there bodging it for the last 20 years or 10 years, then you're trying to work out what some moron has introduced to a problem. That can be a headache, but yeah, they are generally speaking more simple to sort out. They do tend to just suffer from the signs of age, like, you know,
like we all do.
Yeah, I'm tired. The oil leak, they do suffer from a lot of oil leaks and rust on the body, and they do have and all the engine tin wear usually. But if you get a good one, it's a good one. It's just there's a lot of, and you don't, to be honest, it's quite sad really. I don't see that many of them that are like original anymore, because a lot of them are getting chopped up now, aren't they, for all these resto mods.
Well, we've definitely covered that on Nineworks TV recently with a lovely car from Phil Raby, actually, and covering exactly that. It's rare to see one as is, Chris, you know.
Yeah.
I think also people have forgotten the fact that 964s have long been known for dropping oil, always have done. And broken head studs as well, which was kind of that issue was alleviated by 993. But again, where the 964 has been put on that pedestal, I think that kind of maybe gets forgotten when it comes to those cars in original form anyway.
Yeah. I sort of feel like I'd like to save a 964. I don't know if that's, you know, they aren't maybe quite an endangered species yet, but I really like them on D90s and flag mirrors, you know, up in the air. That's what I'd really like.
Just save them from the resto
original. Original. Yeah, I would. That's what I'd like to do. I feel the need. Unfortunately, I don't have the funds. I might need your help, Chris.
So there was something that you both touched on there then in regards to in comparison to modern stuff and how kind of difficult some of the modern stuff can be to kind of approach. So it'd be nice to get an understanding of how your jobs day to day have changed as a result of this technological intervention with the motor vehicle.
I'd say a lot more, using a computer a lot more, unfortunately, which, so obviously the diagnostics, and then a lot of like fault finding and stuff, you'll have to go for a big system either on the manuals, or we're logged on now with Porsche with the PPN, so you've got a lot of expansive information to go through, but there can be a lot of reading. But then, I mean, the old school stuff's similar, but it's in a book. You've just got a small book, or the information now is, there's more of it, and it is better translated, because the old stuff is sort of like translated from German into English, and you read it sometimes and go, what are they on about? Because the translation, but yeah, that's, I would say that's, yeah, we're doing a lot more, and you have to sometimes think. I mean, it's more my, I don't get my hands dirty too much anymore, but the boys at work, I mean, one system can interact with another and cause a problem further down the line with something else, whereas before that, it's usually more mechanical, usually. It's a lot simpler. I mean, like in like something like a 964, you just plug the thing into like one box. I mean, now it's got several systems. It's complicated, as you know. Even with like the 996s you have, is, you know, it's quite a complicated animal, and that's old technology now. It's like, but was it 25 years old? The green one, isn't it? And then, but then obviously that was designed previously, so it's obviously, it's probably like you're working with 30-year-old tech, whereas like what we're on now, so it's complicated, really. I mean, I often sort of say to people, like, you know, mechanics, technicians, engineers, whatever you want to call them, I've got a difficult lot. If you're expected to be like electrical engineer, a mechanical engineer, like a fluid expert, if you're dealing with fluids and all this kind of stuff, you've got to try and to figure out what's making this thing work. With some nutters designed in Stuttgart.
That's the perfect synopsis, I think.
But no, I love it, but it is madness, isn't it? If you try to explain it to an alien, they'd be like, what are you up to?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What about from your point of view then, Ollie? How's like this rise in technology affected you?
In some ways it makes it easier. When it does come to finding faults, where you are almost talking to a computer, it can sometimes send you in a direct channel that you need to go down to find out where the fault is, which compared to older cars, sometimes it wouldn't be that advanced. But sort of as Chris has said, where there's so much communication going around in the car, it can send you down 100 different paths before you actually work out like the source of it. So it can be sort of bittersweet in a way that it can really help you out sometimes. Other times it can just be a pain in the neck, especially, you know, as Chris said, you got guys who are unbelievably intelligent, guys or girls, designing these systems. And slowly they sort of filter down into local garages. And you've got to sort of try to piece together how these systems work, how they communicate with each other, why something might not be working, and actually get it resolved. Even simple stuff like taking bumpers off. Nowadays, you've got to be careful, because if it's got all the cameras with ADAS, you can't take bumper off to change an aircon condenser. If you do that, you then need to calibrate it all back up again.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Otherwise, you could be in a lot of trouble if that person drives down the road and the car doesn't stop.
That's a great point, Ollie, to be fair. And it reminds me, when I was at Schrade Accident Repair earlier this year, the guys were talking us through, they have had a load of Taycans in, as they often do. And the process to recalibrate that car for the road takes a day and a half.
Jeez.
And it's, you know, that's a day and a half that somewhere, some point, you know, somebody has to pay for that. It tends to be insurance work, but, you know, sometimes it's not and whatever. And it's a day and a half, as you said, to recalibrate things like sensors and whatnot. It might be worth doing as a video, actually. coming up. But you're right, and I suppose the modern stuff succumbed to that process. It's more process driven, more and more.
Yeah. I mean, so many things nowadays need programming. If you know, we're not online with Porsche, so certain jobs we just can't touch because you can find a faulty module, pop a new one in, but the car will lock you out, as opposed to you being able to program it into the car. So, you know, there's a whole balance, and we're in a situation at the moment of how long do we hold out having to invest in, you know, the next stage of, you know, PWS 4 or, you know, getting ourselves online. You know, are we going to benefit, and are we seeing enough of this work coming through that we need to step our game up with the next generation of cars coming down?
Yeah. It's a difficult balancing act, isn't it?
I know.
Working out when you're going to invest in new tooling.
Yeah.
Absolutely. When we're talking about tooling, I'm trying to imagine how much money you have to spend on equipment. It just blows my mind thinking about it. It must be continuous with new cars coming along. How much new tooling do you have to buy?
It is very expensive. It's very expensive. Even just for just the mechanics hand tools, a toolbox full of snap-on tools or whatever you use, it's very expensive. I could talk from experience on a small garage, it's easily approaching $100,000 of tooling and kit and software. And so some of these bigger places, I mean, I'd hate to think. And then we don't have a very expensive, like you were saying about the ADAS machine for recalibrating for that stuff for the new cars, like when you take the bumpers off, etc., the cameras, etc. They're very, very expensive. I can't remember what they are, but and then there's, you know, geo ramps. You know, and then with electric cars and hybrids, you have to retool again because you need all the tooling to be insulated so you don't, the mechanics have less chance of getting electrocuted.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a serious, serious investment, really.
When you think about it, that's all included in the hourly rate that gets charged. So it's very easy for us as a customer to go, how much for an hourly rate? You know, you're getting paid a quid or
£20 an hour.
Yeah. Only took you half an hour. Sure, you know, I only get paid such and such, but yeah, you forget all of the tooling that needs to be paid, the rent on the garage and all that sort of stuff, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It's dear.
Is there a preference, and I appreciate this is very much like a personal prerogative and not necessarily representative of the businesses that you're with, but is there a certain era or generation of Porsche sports car that you just like working on over any others?
I prefer the water cools, and my favourite is probably the 997 generation.
Yes!
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. I think that was a sweet spot with comfortability, you know, that you can actually get to bits. They're my favourite. And for me anyway, they're the nicest ones, or the ones I look forward to the most when it comes to working on.
Yeah.
Is there any difference between a Gen 1 and a Gen 2 that you see regularly? Or is it more difference between a 2 and a 4 or a Turbo and a Carrera, that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's always differences. I mean, between the different generations, you know, even how you do a service, they have the oil filter in a different place. Getting to the spark plugs is different. I mean, fundamentally, they're very similar cars. You know, if you're changing a clutch, you know, it's going to be slightly different if it's four-wheel drive to two-wheel drive. There are little differences like that. But I do think overall, they're all quite similar. Turbos are slightly different, and you sort of approach in a bit of a different way. I'd definitely err towards them.
How are you, Chris?
Me?
Yeah. What's your fave?
Sorry. Yeah. No. Personally, I like 996s and 3-2 Carreras is my personal favourite, just for like simplicity reasons, really. But, you know, that's not for everyone, is it?
Okay, well, so
how about your worst? Let's flip it. What do you hate working on?
KNs are quite a lot of aggro, usually. Can be. Yeah. 928s can be like, it's all to do normally with the like sort of complicated electrical problems where you're just scratching your head, you know, for a long time, and then you think you fixed it and it behaves itself for 3 days and then it starts doing it again. You're like,
yeah, but heinously over into it.
I like 3-2 Carreras. And oh yeah, and if I had one more, I'd love those the 930 turbo as well, from the same era, obviously, as the 3-2. Earlier than that is, oh, we do a lot of old cut early ones, but they're just, you know, a little bit more antiquated, a little bit, you've got to think about it a bit more. 3-2 sort of that sort of sweet spot, and I just like the 996 because I still think, well, it's like a modern car, it's still relatively simple, and also it's just, I think, a big. Although they get lamented and people like whinge about them a lot, they is a big like jump forward from a from, you know, 993. It was a big, you know, it's the company moving forward, and I think that's cool. And as time goes on, I think they will be more like, you know, 15 years ago, 964s were like worthless, and they were. I think it will be. I'll be funny to see what happens in, you know, another 10 or 15 years. But there we go.
Well, you guys really are saving 996s one car at a time, providing the owner is willing to dust the wallet off.
They are though. A lot of customers are saying to us, "I'm like, you know, this is going to be expensive." And they're like, "Well, I love it, and I think it's going to be hopefully a modern classic." So, what am I going to do? Throw it away? So they often are like, "Yeah, just let's get it sorted," which is good,
right? Yeah. That's enough of the loving on the 996s. Let's go back to Ollie. What's the worst car that you'd like that you
I know it's not a 911, but I can't stand KNs. water damage, everything's heavy and bulky. As soon as you start talking about like AdBlue systems,
oh god,
I start to switch off. I don't like them. But not as far as 911s go. The ones that I don't look forward to, probably 964, I'd say.
Yeah,
interesting. What would be good to touch on is 991s, right? So they're not the new 911 anymore, and in actual fact, like the early models are now 10 years old. So with that in mind, have there been any issues arising, you know, any common issues arising that you're perhaps becoming more aware of, or kind of do they hold on to a reputation? Well, I don't think they do have a reputation actually of being fairly bulletproof, but you know, what's your experience of 991s?
I'd say I think they're very reliable cars, to be honest. You do get your issues. I personally find them age-related issues, whether it might be a level sensor, or, you know, just general bits that are gonna go wrong over time. I quite happily say that the engines are pretty bulletproof. Gearboxes, we rarely see PDKs going wrong. You know, seen a couple like wheel bearings, suspension over time, you know, it just ages. So again, bits like that we do see. But for a car that, what, 10 years old, I'd say they're still going really strong. Mainly when we see them, it's down servicing, brakes, just serviceable parts, really.
Yeah, yeah. And Chris, what's the view from the other end of the A34?
I would agree 100%. We've had very little aggro with them. I don't want to say they're bulletproof, because then every single one will probably blow up or something. But I've had no aggro with them. Really, we've had some small minor issues and then just general wear and tear. So yeah, same.
Yeah. Well, we just had that with mine, didn't we, Chris? When I had mine, we just had a couple of little things. We had a Paddam, you know, that's the active engine mount thing. That's a bit of a
but it's a simple fix.
Yeah, and of course that's not unique to 991s, is it? That's the, you know, Padam's, you know, one other Porsches as well, and I think they're a bit of a weak point on all of them. And then we had that vacuum sort of thing, but that was just a sort of classic modern like car thing, not a 991 thing particularly. Yeah,
no, and I've had a few of them like go, but not, but like, yeah, I can't even. You only remember the problematic stuff, and yeah, with 991s, I haven't. Yeah, they're very little to comment about because we haven't had any issues.
What about, do you see, do either of you see it, the turbos on the 991.2 and now the 992, I suppose, not so many 992s coming through, but that 3-litre twin turbo.
We've had a couple of problems with some turbos going wrong. That has happened. I don't know. Have you seen any of that?
It's probably something we've missed. We haven't really seen too many issues with 991 turbos as such. We've seen it with 997s, but a lot of the time people have messed around with their cars. it's a case of trying to like rein it all back in again, getting the cars back to how they were designed in the first place, and sort of start making that the base point and going from there. I couldn't tell you the last time I changed a turbo on a Porsche, long time ago.
Mm. Well, you've raised a really good, interesting point, Ollie, there, with regards to modifications. Mm. So, you know, you've both said at different stages of the conversation, you like variety. All of us as presenters on the podcast, we love modifying cars, or modify cars some way or another. So somebody tips up at your place with a modified 911, wants some work doing, you know, what's your first thought? Are you excited or are you fearful?
It depends what it looks like. Depends if it's tacky or not. If it's tacky, we've had all sorts of people turn up. We had, this was years ago when we just started up the garage. You know, you get the coloured dials. The guy's obviously tried to do it cheap, so he's got some coloured paper, plastic, stuck them on, cut out his little speedo.
oh my god!
So yeah, I think some of it's really tasteful and some of it's really nice. More often than not, people don't go too in depth with the mechanical side of upgrading the cars. A lot of it's like lights, grills on the bumper, your wheels, tyres, brakes, stuff like that. They sort of upgrade.
What about you, Chris? What do you think when somebody tips up?
Oh, you mean people with green 996s?
yeah.
I'm just waiting to go under the bus.
Of course, I'm always going to take the next one. No, yeah, it depends on the client and what's been done. I know that's like a cop-out answer, but sometimes you look at the thing and you think, oh, it's best that we don't touch this because this is a tandem like disaster.
Unexploded bomb ready to go at any moment.
Of course, yeah. You have to think about it from a business point of view.
Yeah.
If you touch it, the thing breaks, they go, well, it was fine before. Now you've taken wheel off and the engines explode, it's obviously your fault, isn't it? So, but yeah, by the large, most of them have been tastefully or just like modified a bit. And so, yeah, but you have to be, the older the car is, the more likely it is that it's going to be not as standard to the manufacturer, whether that's been different aftermarket parts fitted, problems have been rectified cheaply. So you could say it's a modified car when it's not even, it's not really seen as being modified, but it has been modified to the, the manufacturer's spec or build sheet, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, you just got to work around. It's part of the fun.
Mm. How much do you think, Chris, just thinking about, you know, the business over the course of a rolling year, when someone comes to you with a potential project like that, do you think, you know, I suppose you've got to take these things at face value, but are you thinking if we take this on, we could have this car here for 6 months, but at the same time, you know, we could do, you know, 10 other more regular jobs? And do you think, you know, I'd rather do that than t'other? Or does it depend on the individual if they say, I'm going to open my checkbook, but you might have the car for a year? Is that a good thing? Do you think, brilliant, we'll have that? Or do you think actually we'd rather turn over, you know, more simple jobs?
It usually with these projects, they go on longer than you ever think they will, and they become more expansive. In terms of like being lucrative, it's very difficult to always charge the hours that you spend doing it, and difficult to justify it. So in terms of just doing servicing and just banging it out, as word, obviously we take care, but changing oil is not as complicated as doing a bespoke engine or gearbox build or whatever we're doing in the car. But in terms of like, it is a headache, but I like doing these odd and fun projects and getting involved with stuff like that. But you sort of have to take a view, and yes, whether you want to do it. I know some people don't like getting involved, but I do. But if it is, you know, yeah, it has to be the correct project to look at. So It just depends. It all depends on the car and the client.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I suppose it's nice to have a bit of both ultimately, have an interesting that's project exactly on the go and
Yeah, you're right. And that's what we do. So we do the stuff because sometimes you know, I'm human. You go into work some days and you're like, oh, you know, I'm tired. It'd be nice.
Easy.
Like do oil and brakes on this box still or something, or you know, whatever. Or do I want to try and sort this headache out we've got with this completely bespoke thing we're doing? You know, but that's good. And that's like what we both said at the beginning, having that variety is nice.
You're sort of talking about customers there. I was wondering what your favourite type of customer is.
Someone who's quite not trusting in a bad way, but sort of takes your word for what you say. It can be really hard because a lot of these cars are people's pride and joy. Whoever you are, no one wants to spend money if they don't have to spend money.
Yeah.
Whether it might be on their hobby or their car, you know. But a lot of the customers that we like dealing with and look forward to them finding us up are the customers who are happy to pay the money that we do charge, not question it too much, and actually, you know, sort of appreciate it.
And Chris?
I prefer to deal with people who are nice and pleasant and reasonable. That's my preferred customer. Other than that, I'm not too bothered.
At least they're reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I suppose there's as much of a variety in the customers as there is in the car, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, of course. I've had some lunatics through those doors.
I wonder if it's a bit like, you know, the saying where a dog looks like their owner. I wonder if it's the same with cars.
Yeah, it can be hard. I mean, we sit in the sales as well. People have a certain expectation of their car. Sometimes trying to explain to someone they need work or they have an issue, you never get into an argument with them, but trying to communicate in a different way to help them understand what you're trying to explain to them. Just like when we try to sell someone's car, I say, oh, you know, it might need the wheels done, it might be this done, that done. There can sometimes be a bit of a wall that you have to work around. But 9 times out of 10, all our customers are pretty good. So I can't put them.
I think it's an interesting topic to touch on, again, in talking about like the similarities between the you guys and the businesses, certainly, that you represent. My opinion, anyway, from what I have seen as a journalist in the industry, is certainly over the last 10 years, there are some very, 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 very good independent specialists that give the Porsche main dealer network a real run for its money. Sometimes that similarity is reflected in the pricing now, so that the main kind of difference between independent specialist and OPC can just be the experience that you get as a customer. And again, there's no right or wrong. It's just dependent on the customer and their preferences, right? What I really like about your two businesses is when you walk in, you're treated maybe as an enthusiast more than a customer. So it's not, you know, hi, sir, would you like to walk through to the latte lounge, sir? It's like, you know, look, there's an amazing 3-2 Carrera on the ramp. Why don't you come and have a look, you know? And even I know, Ollie, at Philip Raby, there's the sales arm, which kind of came first in the company. But what I like about your place is you have to walk through the workshop to get to like the lounge where you are now, or you know, the sales room itself. I really like that. So again, as an enthusiast, I'm like, oh, cool, right? What's on the ramp? What's going on? So it does kind of come down to experience from the customer side. But I suppose, what do you guys make from where you are on the OPC versus independent specialist debate? Do you do things differently? Do you approach things differently? Or is there more similarities to be found there than we might think?
I can only talk for us, but it is like, yeah, there's no bullshit. It's not flash, but to quote one of my customers, and you know, I don't know. He said, I always remember when I first bought my car to your dad, and he said to me, you won't get a cup of coffee here, but what you will get is a fucking good job. and that's sort of like almost our ethos. Like, yeah, we just want to make it, the engineering and the work, as perfect as possible. And then I don't have to worry at night. I don't, you know, I want everything to be right, because I'm quite anal with all that sort of stuff. And also, if you're talking about, you know, money and budget and stuff, if you're getting a, you know, someone came in once and said, well, when I take my car to Porsche, I get a KM to use for the week. And I went, well, I can do that for you if you want. He went, really? I went, yeah, I'll just charge you £200 an hour and then I'll rent one for you. It goes on the bill, doesn't it? So all of that stuff you're paying for, which is great. If that's the experience you want, that's fine. But with us, you won't. But also what you'll get with us is you'll speak to the person doing the job. We'll talk to you normally, like a human being, and show you the problem. You go, come and have a look at it on the ramp if you want. You know, let's have a look. You know, whereas some places I understand that you just speak to someone at reception and never even see the car going in the workshop and don't really know what's happened. So that's it. I hope and I feel what we're giving everyone is a more personalized service that's tailored for what you want.
Yeah, it's personal preference, isn't it? That's the key. And it's nice that as a consumer, there's so much choice out there for people to make the right decision for them. But Ollie, I'm keen to get what your thoughts are on that question.
I think Chris hit nail on the head. You know, it's a more personal way of having your car serviced. You know, you meeting the technician, actually getting their honest opinion about the car, whether being up and around, being able to see around the car for yourself. There's always a bit of a feeling with Porsche or any, you know, main dealer, that they're always trying to make your car new again. And the problem is, when you've got a 20-year-old car, to make it new, it would need a huge amount of work. So, you know, when they do go through their health checks, they'll put loads of stuff in red, loads of stuff in orange, and, you know, whether it's to get money or how it works, I'm not 100% sure, because I've never worked for them. However, there's a lot of things that do just need monitoring. You can make someone aware about it on their car, but it's not a case of they need to get it sorted. The amount of customers who come in and say, I've been to Porsche, they've said I've got this oil leak, they've quoted me 2 days worth of work and all these parts to get it sorted. And you look and it's a tiny little dribble, and more than half the cars on the road, if not even more than that, a leaking oil. And yeah, obviously it's a point to say your car does have an oil leak, but it's much more of a point to say next year we'll wash it off and see how much has come back, whether we need to address it then, as opposed to you've got an oil leak, you need to sort it out. So I think that's why a lot of people do look for the independents to take their car to. Not only is it slightly cheaper, but they get a more honest idea on what their car is like.
Excellent thoughts. Excellent. Okay. Look, cracking. Gents, I think it's been a really fun conversation here. We've definitely covered a lot in terms of what it's like, certainly from from your side of the fence as well, which, you know, we as customers, we certainly don't appreciate that. So, you know, I want to say thank you to you both for a start anyway for that. To finish, yeah, though, I've got a game to play. And if you guys are up for a little bit of fun here, so this will all be taken in jest, of course, but maybe if Max, Andy and I could, we'll take it in turns, but we'll choose three cars each. So Porsche model, obviously. We'll say that model out loud. And then if you guys could just divulge the very first thing that comes to your head by way of common fault or nightmare job or something, just because I'm sure you have seen and done it all. So again, if we, between the three of us, choose some variety and you just, no context as well, you just got to say what it is and then we'll ask the next one if you're cool for that.
We'll give it a go.
Amazing. All right. Okay. All right. So I'll go first just to get things rolling. So I'm going to start with 986 Boxster.
Bush. So he sold one a little while ago, not because this guy wanted to buy it, but he managed to drive it into a bush.
So. That's incredible.
So he got stuck with a car he had to buy afterwards.
That's incredible. I thought you meant Polly Bush there, but your story was much more entertaining.
I thought he was on about Polly Bush as well,
Chris?
Or just roof, really, because nearly every single time someone comes to collect one, they just sort of get in it and open the roof and just grin at me. And roof down. I'm like, they're so happy with putting the roof down.
That's fantastic. I'm just quite
fantastic, yeah.
Andy, what have you got?
Porsche 914.
I just think I can't fit in it. I don't know what the right word for that is.
Really?
Too small. Too small.
Oily, probably. Yeah, I don't have a huge amount of experience with them, really. But ones I have seen, usually. Yeah.
Oily. That's preservation, oily, isn't it? They're preserving themselves.
Porsche perfume.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Max?
McCann S Diesel.
Or AdBlue.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly the same thing.
Wretched AdBlue.
Yeah, there's some grimacing going on here from both Ollie and Chris when saying that as well.
And me as well.
Yeah. All right, then 997 Turbo. First thought that comes to your head, Ollie.
Quick.
Yeah, I was going to say same, fast, rapid.
Yeah.
I wondered if coolant lines was going to be in there, but yeah, never mind.
That's just a problem for all 997s, not just turbos. Mm. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Andy?
Oh, it's got to be a 911 SC, isn't it? Got to pick my own.
Please give a problem, boys, please.
Windscreens. It's a bit different, but I know when I started out with Will and Phil, we had an SC in. I'd never fitted windscreens before, so I wasn't going to take the job on. So you get a window guy out, and he spent a good half a day, left and hadn't fitted it.
Just left.
we were like, who do you turn to now? You find the windscreen guy, and he can't do it. We got it done in the end.
Yeah. I think of them as being just, I always think revy, because the way the crank spins, it's really like a nice revving engine. But if you want me to shatter your dreams, Andy, you've got quite a nice one.
Thanks.
But they usually are rusty, the bodies are rusty, usually. So you've got to look out for that.
Yeah. Rust. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Rust and revs,
yeah. The perfect combo. The more it rusts, the faster it revs.
Yeah, it weighs less.
Yeah.
That sounds Max. Like a cars and coffee, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Rust and revs, yeah.
We got Max.
What about a Metzger engine GT3, 996 and 997?
Perfect.
Vacuum lines. We had one pop a vacuum line off the other day. Or a couple of weeks ago, like Goodwoods, inadvertently caused the brakes to not work. where it was up to the to the brake pedal coming up, coming down to the bottom of the straight. Luckily, I wasn't in the car. Oh, I think that was quite hairy. So,
yeah.
But otherwise, pretty perfect. I'd have to agree with Chris there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right then. So one to finish. Or what am I going to go for? I'm going to go for 993 Targa.
Black. Ooh. The black sealant trap that they all filled it. The Porsche main dealers filled it in the roof to seal them up. And then when you have one, the roof out, it's aggro and you've got to scrape it off and it takes like days. It's horrendous.
To be honest, I like my 993 Targa.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
They are
so cool. clean bill of health there, really, from Ollie, I'd say. Andy, last one.
1973 RS.
MFI, nice, good. Expensive.
Definitely expensive.
Yeah, no, they're good, aren't they? Very, very good. Very
are
good.
Are you sort of scared to go near them? No. When you work on them?
Costs the same to buy. It costs the same to fix that as like an old nail of a 3.2 or something, really. Yeah. The MFI is a bit of a not many people know what they're doing with those pumps.
Yeah.
That is a slightly added bit of aggro, but no, I'm not scared. No. It's obviously become this, you know, poster child and very expensive one, but really this, you know, if you compare that to like a 2.2 or 2.4,
yeah,
it's not really a lot, you know. It's not that much difference other than the price tag, really. I mean, yeah, there are, of course, but you know, it's yeah, no, not scared, but yeah, they are lovely cars.
Ollie, what was your first thought for the 2.7 RS?
Expensive,
yeah. Yeah, well timed. Well,
too much money for me, I know that.
Yeah. Quality. All right, yeah, last one then, Max.
It's got to be 981 Boxster, isn't it?
Ooh.
Again, plenty of problems need to arise here, boys.
I was going to say hairdryer, but I don't really think that's true.
Hairdresser?
Hairdresser. but I do actually really like them.
Yeah,
same. I mean, I think they're great. It's a marked improvement on from the 987 and 986, which I feel relatively similar. There's a big step forward, and like what we said about 991s earlier, sort of that era, and I've had very little trouble with them. And in fact, one of my I've got a great personal friend, and he had one and he sold it, and he literally nearly every time I see him, he's like, I so regret selling that car, I wish I kept it. And he's one of these people that has loads of cars, all new and nice, and he just misses his 981.
Oh, brilliant.
I think, but one, yeah, thing you do have to watch out for that we've talked about, Chris, and you said when I first bought mine, is to keep an eye on the rain channels.
That is an issue. Yeah, sorry, I should have highlighted that. Yeah, they are aggro to clean out and to keep clear. That is something they actually like messed up. It's actually worse than the earlier models in a way, because the rain channel is very small and it's awkward to get to it. It's the drains, particularly the roof mechanism is in the rear quarters, that drain can get blocked, and then you get wet car, electronic issues, all sorts of things.
Yeah,
we've had very little roof issues with them. We've had one recently, but that's the first and only one with terms of like the roof packing up. But yeah. Whereas with 986 and 987 boxes, we've had lots of micro switch problems over the years. These have, so far, been pretty, they've behaved themselves for us. I don't know. How about you?
Yeah, good. Yeah, a bit of water. I haven't seen it for a couple of years now, but I know a couple of years ago we had a few fill up with water. We seem to be seeing tons of 986s filling up with water at the moment. I personally love the 981. Really good cars, but just check your drain holes.
Yeah. Righty. Nice. All right, gents. Well, look, thanks for your diagnostic 101 and knee-jerk reaction diagnostics there on that. That was quite a fun game, actually. And like I said, look, thanks for your time today. It's been really interesting to just see what goes on, really, from your world and your side of the fence when we drop our lovely cars off at your lovely businesses. So thank you.
Thanks, guys. I hope it kind of helps the customers understand the predicaments that you get yourselves in, as it were, with them.
Yeah, or more likely what other people put you in.
Yeah, indeed.
Turning up the day before a European road trip. Can you just have a quick look at my car?
Yeah, it'll be fine to drive us in Norway, won't it?
Yeah. That did not happen.
Stuck my teeth.
Fantastic. Look, Chris from Right Tune, Ollie from Philip Raby. Yeah, thanks very much for joining us today on Nine Radio.
Thank you.
Oosh. Cheers to Chris from Right Tune and Ollie from Philip Raby Porsche for their time. Do really, really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank and you, there guys.
There we go, gents. Yeah, so maybe a little bit more empathy gained for the guys.
What, for them or us?
Yeah, no. Yeah. Well, we're the guys that have to foot the bill. But it's just, I think, nice to understand what it's like and, you know, what they're thinking when we drop our cars off.
Yeah,
really interesting. Interesting insight.
I think the real big thing is the, for me, is the labour rate. Is you kind of, when you initially think of the labour rate, you think, Jesus, that's a lot per hour. But you forget about all the stuff that they need to buy and the units they rent and the, you know, all the costs. It's not just hourly rate, as in a man there spinning spanners. It's all the kit and stuff that goes with it to enable that guy to do the work.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of giving them a hands up, say, well done, guys, for doing what you do.
Yeah, without a doubt. And also, it kind of something that we didn't particularly cover in the conversation, but is worth mentioning. And that's that, you know, you pay a specialist exactly for that. It's for their specialist knowledge that they have gained throughout the years on that subject. So again, you know, in kind of what we were doing really with the game we were playing, I know the guys interpreted the question perhaps slightly differently and maybe talked about some experiences they'd had with the car. But in terms of like the diagnostics 101, if you think of a car, you know, they know the common problems or faults that associate with each car. And, you know, if you go to a non-specialist, you know, often you're paying for them to fault find.
To learn.
Job, you know, whereas you're with the specialism, you're paying for that expertise is exactly the word.
Yeah, they'll probably be able to fix it in much less time than the guy that doesn't know. So
yeah, they'll have half
in the end, it'll cost you less.
Definitely. And they'll know what they're looking for as well. Yeah. So, worth bearing in mind, I would say.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's no doubt that if you've got a car that you really care about, that taking it to someone who knows about them and cares about them, there's loads of value in that. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. And that's true of all marks, not just Porsches. Maybe 911s being so idiosyncratic, maybe even more so in Porsches. I don't know. But yeah, specialism's where it's at.
Yeah. Superb. So yeah, look, it was nice to have the guys on. So thanks again for that. We've got a gem of the week, Max, as we always have.
Yeah, we have to. I actually had this one in my back pocket last week, but I didn't use it. But it had caught my eye when I was looking through, and I suppose the thing that I was looking at on the marketplace, you know, the way you can search the marketplace looking for sort of different, not different cars, similar kinds of cars from different specialists,
yeah,
and that kind of thing. I was noticing the sort of the price of GT cars and older and newer GT cars that sit at similar price points, you know, not price points that I'm at, but, you know, interesting, the price of 991s versus 997 and 996 GT3s, but also where you bring in the RS factor. And RPM have got a really, really, really cool car. They've got a car that I refer to as the forgotten RS, 997.1 GT3 RS. black with the orange decals. RPM have taken it in from an owner who's had it for 8 years. So it's got some nice provenance. It's a really, really beautiful car. It's done just a whisker under 30,000 miles. It would soon be over 30,000 if I had it. It's 135 grand. It's really lovely. If you go on to RPM socials, they've done a bit of video on it. But it's beautiful, but it's interesting to look at it on the marketplace in the context of things that are a similar price. 991 GT3s, 0.2s. But I mean, there's something special about an RS, isn't there?
Oh, without a doubt. Do you know, that's such a good point as well. Like we've covered it slightly previously on the pod, and in regards to the 997.1, it's kind of been overlooked. Everything works in the favour of that car, you know, 1100 made, like approximately. Yeah, as you said, you know, that RS badge is legendary. But, you know, I wonder if there's a bit of a theme developing under the march of time. And so the 997.1 RS is often forgotten about. And I kind of feel like these days the 991.1 RS is often forgotten about as well.
Mm.
You know, everyone seems to lurch for the Gen 2 if they can. Obviously, it's improved over the 991.1 in a lot of ways, actually. It's a superior car. But like, if you're judging the 991.1 against the 997.2 RS, although I prefer the .2, that to me is a more interesting ownership proposition. There's no denying that the 991.1 RS is a superior car to its predecessor.
Yeah.
Not excluding the 4 litre. But yeah, I don't know. Obviously, we've just had the 992 RS will become one day the 992.1. And will that perhaps be just overlooked or forgotten about, perhaps, under that march of time? Is it a Gen 1 thing?
Yeah, maybe. Because the 906 RS has overtaken the 997.1 or matched it, certainly, in terms of values, maybe gone ahead.
Yeah.
You know, people are valuing that, you know, the first water-cooled RS thing and some, you know, an element of rawness because of the passive suspension and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think people connect the 0.2 RS with the 4 litre and things like that, you know. Yeah. So it does leave the 997.1, slightly lost. And I think you're right, true of the 991.1 as well.
Yeah. I mean, against the 991.1 RS is the fact that there were thousands of them made, like absolutely thousands. But with the 997.1, as I said, you know, just over 1,100 made, it's not a lot, particularly like in regards to, or in contrast to modern times and modern build numbers. You're right, Max, the 996 RS has certainly leveled with it in the marketplace, if not overtaken it slightly. There might be a numbers thing in that because they're basically half as rare, give or take. And the 996 is GT3 RS Genesis. So from a collector point of view, that does hold high appeal. But yeah, the 997.1, it's always kind of been a bit lost, really. Well, certainly the last 10 years or so.
Yeah.
I've got to say, I prefer the back end of the .1 over the .2.
Do you really? Yeah,
I do. I think the rear lights, the shape of the rear lights, for some reason, the .2, I think it's because they went all a bit LED as well on the .2, and I prefer it without the LED stuff going on.
It looks very much of its time, wasn't it? Yeah. It was like that early LEDs.
Yeah.
I think the 0.1 is a very handsome car. It really is.
Yeah, it is. In a way, I kind of wish it was under the radar, remains under the radar, because I kind of look at that as a car going forward. You know, maybe if one day, if I was ever so lucky, I'd quite like to own one of them. It's a brilliant car. And
Gem of the Week.
Yeah, it is a good gem of the week, without a doubt. But the Gen 2 is very different, but I don't think you'd feel shortchanged if you ended up with a 997.1.
Agreed.
So
there we go. That's gem of the week.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, thanks, Max, for that. Is there any other housekeeping, Mr. B?
Yeah, I've got a couple of new collective members to announce, if I may. First up is Roger Behag, who is a privateer. He is from Edgecott in Buckinghamshire. Believe you might know him, Max.
I know Roger. Yeah,
you do.
I know the BHAGs. I've known the BHAGs.
Good.
You know, for I don't know, 30 years or something. Roger's kids. Fantastic. You know, we're of a similar age. He's got 2 sons, 2 daughters. You know, all a similar age to me. Went to similar schools. Had mutual friends. So yeah, I've known those guys for a long time.
Excellent.
And reconnected with Roger few years ago when he got his 997.2 cab, which is
that's right. Yeah, he's had it nearly 2 years. Says that he still gets a buzz whenever he drives it.
Yeah, good to have you on board, Roger.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Right, next up is Craig Story, who is also a privateer. Craig has a cobalt blue 996 C4S with factory GT3 wheels, apparently. He bought it up in Glasgow, but lives down in Bracknell. So welcome aboard, Craig.
Lovely. That's, what a first drive that would have been, Craig.
Yeah,
wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Good old drive down.
Cobalt blue on those 996s. That looks fantastic, doesn't it? That would be a mega looking car. I can imagine it exactly. What about the interior, Andy? Does it say what colour the interior is?
No, it doesn't say what colour the interior is.
We'll find out on the WhatsApp.
Yeah, it'll be joining us in the next day or so on WhatsApp. So we'll get the lowdown. Grand. That's it for this
excellent.
Amazing. Thanks to all who are joining the Driven Not Hidden Collective. We do always appreciate it. And I guess we'll see you next episode.
See you next time.
This episode was brought to you by our very kind Driven Not Hidden Collective. If you would like to join the collective to get further access and rewards within the Nineworks community, you can do so at patreon.com/Nineworks. You can also support us by leaving a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app.